I was thinking when I was sitting in the room listening to Kaplan Harris was giving a version of history the other day, and there were so many pieces that struck me as missing, like female pieces. And when I was listening to Judy Grind, I was like, why wasn't Judy Grind in there? But I also thought there were magazines and anthologies that weren't in there, and one of them was Little Caesar, which was an amazing, it was kind of, I feel like Dennis's magazine was like a precursor of new narrative, and a bunch of us met in that magazine, and somebody asked me to read a poem, so I have a request that sort of overlaps with all that. It's called Mount St. Helens. Because I think part of what we're doing is trying to make a conversation, like if new narrative is a moment, is it like a Weimar thing or is it like a present thing, you know? And is it like, was AIDS like the Zapruder footage that you know, changed that place, or is, you know, and where are we now? But there were always these books and these people, and they were always leaving. Mount St. Helens. Joel Colton died right here. He was a poet. He visited me once in his car with a Polaroid camera. I got it somewhere. Portrait of Eileen by Joel Colton. I know I got a picture of him. And you can see the landscape traveling by with some poet in their 20s. When I knew Joel Colton, I was younger then. It's a story, said Juliet. Yeah, all that lava. I don't think of him, but I use his lines all the time. I had his poem on my wall for a year. See, they get born on the left. I tell my class, it's a spine. I mean, Joel Colton's, a snap of his nerves, heading right, the infinity of his line, born, die. Every time the gesture is complete, Joel Colton, who died here. This is one of my newest poems. Transmission. I'm overcome by the cruelty of nature. No, I mean I'm with it. And each little capacity it has can't be transferred. I mean a spruce can't give its oils to you, can it? But that's how it grows in the absence of technology. My thoughts grow. My thoughts grow among trees, but I don't help them, though I'm for them. I'm for my dog, and incidentally, I feed her, but I don't see her much. Joe does. Joe is my friend and also a dog father. I don't help mountains. Mountains help me. I know the planet is old and splashy. Sleeps help me. Helps me. Time helps me. My mother helped me, and now she is gone. She also hurt me, so it's good that she's gone. I can grow different in the day or 3 decades in which I've got left. I can grow towards the mountains, sit in solidarity with prisoners, or go to jail. I'm not joking. I can push different. I want to say something about my cunt, because that's what you ask. But I am alone. No mother, no phone, just a notebook and a cunt, and my thoughts. I don't even think my thoughts. You do. The vow. Everything's like a shade of brightness and dark, like this new pad I got on my computer, or these doorways opening one to the next, which is where I began. Nothing is like my dog eating an apple core in bed. The sleeping bag is red. It's March and it's already warm. I don't want you stepping on my computer, which is where all my friends are, some of whom are Nazis. I never thought I'd call Nazis friends, but I spend at least an hour a night with these ones, and then I wake up and read about the real ones on Twitter. For days, Rebecca Solnit and I struggled to be Facebook friends. It was like we were going to the gym together. We worked it out. I was visiting her today, looking at her face. The heat just rumbled. It's not even evening, but I thought I'd like to get a little Nazi in early. I would die for my country if that included everything, my friends and my dogs and all the lakes and ponds. I am ready for the struggle. a little bit. It's a little bit true that the hole in my jacket pocket, the breast pocket, yeah, all relaxed, has a hole and pens keep slipping through, ones in the lining, but this one perched, now it's a writing bird, silly black out there, wants to tell its song. Miguel's book was in the air, and I was on a train. My feet are cold, and you wouldn't be in the air so long. It doesn't happen like this. There's no climate in a plane. And I was in one, but not on Earth. My mother is gone, and each thing I do is a little bit wrong. I'm willing to apologize, but they never help. It's just pointing out the hole, and people forget, but I won't forget you. Creep. Ugly nightmare, eating too much, dunking your head in water over and over again. Feel bad for your kid, all of them, but most of all, us. Bad nights when I was young and drinking, predatory men with swollen heads would buy me drinks and want to fuck me again and again because I was nothing to them, and he is our president now. Dear Adam, I said cake, I said top hat, I said microphone, four little golden baby heads. Wait, I said pirate ghost. Wait, wait, I said closed eye smiling cat. He scrawled back, oh my God. I thought, fuck yeah, I can read this at the marathon. He said, Eileen smiles, eh, I can use it. The bell of my computer rang, same message. Wait, the cat is crying with relief. The cat is a devil now. The cat is not mad. The cat making racialized jazz are not my white hands. I'm talking to everyone now, and I'm using a filter. No, I'm not. I acknowledge that there is an image of me twice. I only recently learned the term jazz hands. If we fuck Pennsylvania up, what is our hope to live in a stolen country that was always stolen and worked largely by stolen people? Out of a conservative diaspora came I, mongrel poet from Massachusetts, to make my mark. Love, total accident. Love and these things and opportunities to speak, we can't fall down. Now we team in the new opportunity. We discover what resistance means. Our time and blowing up the inside of my computer. Buck studies. The phone says, delivered. What is? Adam says, did you see my beard? We talk about money a while. I ride my bike, get off the phone, goes ding. It's his beard calling. I go, oh, you have what I want. He says, lol, then skull, then rocket, then turkey, green pistol and a front and a flame. I don't know what to say back to that. I say bike and go. And I get one more poem, and then I'm going to read from my most new narrative book, which is a dog memoir. It's really true. It is the first really new narrative book I've written. This is called The West. There might be nothing. The section of the paper I save for later about buildings, the home, inside, outside too. Yeah, the garden, things that do well, what I have in mind. My favorite radio show is God and Compass. It's like gossip about someone else's life and how to save them and their plants and their flowers. It's like Eloise, the road is long, I mean it. And all I need is to hear a certain designer plans to be alone for the rest of his life, and I think I'm like him. And I'm dying to see that movie. How he does each, every little thing. It's as simple as being a sculpture, having a life. This is not the book of instruction I had intended, but this is when the emptiness noticed its own beginning, like that church I saw when I was young that was simply melting. This is for those who would not name that building, but simply step in, noticing when that has happened. An elaborate piece like being a candelabra, that is the road you were on. I thought, bring your camera. I thought, don't bring your camera. That's what I mean. There'll be plenty for everyone, and my style is adequate to that. Has been planning this moment for years, ushering it in. Tonight, I will do books. I am leaving my house. Which ones do I need? I think you can come on the long and horizontal road of reading. I got the poet. Thank you. Maybe that wasn't the last poem. I was like, it's just. So this is a memoir of a dog who lived, a pit bull who lived from 1990 to 2006, and her name was Rosie. And so I started it when the dog was actually dying, and it went through all these puppets, and there's like many. I get a letter from the dog's lawyer suing me, and I explain how I've tortured the dog, and it does many things. But one thing is true is that one of the people who's one of my teachers as a writer is Fanny Howe, who's like a great poet and prose writer, and has as many relationships with people in this room as anybody else, I think. And so I always follow her. Like, Fanny's 10 years older than me, so Fanny goes someplace, and then she gets a teaching job, she leaves, and then they invite me, you know. She goes to Ireland, and I go to Ireland. So I went to Ireland, and I was like, where should I go? And she was like, well, you go to this artist colony, and then you go to this monastery. It's really good for writing. And I needed like 35 more pages of the book. And so I went to this monastery, and I was just kind of waiting, and then the dog began to speak to me, and so it's sort of like a little patch at the end of this book, and that's where we're gonna go. The dog's journey. And the dog is speaking. So the dog is speaking, basically. If you just go to a monastery, a dog will speak to you. This is an old new narrative trick. I've been gone from your life for 7 years, but believe me, I am keeping an eye on things. I notice a chapter on your list called The Dog's Journey. I read it and think, I can help. I know I'm the dog being referred to, and I'm a pit bull. We love to work, so I will help you get the thing up and running and on its way around the world. Afterglow is totally a book with legs, four if I can be dumb. So it'll go a lot further than your earlier Eileen-based fictions. The dog's journey is, as I envision it, a big chapter, maybe the last. You get that look of fear on your face, Eileen. Okay, I know you don't like to get pushed around. I'm not doing that. But I am most definitely dogging you. You need it. Here's the plan. Imagine this chapter as a tapestry. Seriously, because a dog going on a journey sounds like a kid's book. Cartoon, most likely, and a couple of celebrities will be doing most of our voices, and you won't have any control over that. So my advice, Eileen, is for you to step back a little. Back to the 19th century, which you love, or even the 14th, which was really the day, the heyday of tapestry. Tapestry is absolutely the way to go for this chapter. It's a literature I'd like to rub against. Any dog would. Tapestry is Tony. It will absorb what we give it. I like to pee on this chapter, frankly. I would like to tear it to shreds. A tapestry is bumpy and nubby, even stinky like a couch, and a dog loves a couch. I'm thinking, of course, of the purple one you had in storage for 8 years. It could have been in this chapter where you listed my stuff because it was my couch. I simply loved it. It was us. The couch was the place where you finally fought back. It was so cool and so modern, even you couldn't accept. I had torn it to shreds. It was your California couch. So after my attack, you had it covered in lavender, marine quality fabric, so I could no longer open it. We hit rock. But back to our tapestry, or rugs. I know you were mulling the idea of a wraparound, not a skirt, but something cozy, you know, like a narrator at the top of each chapter so it'd be palatable for the sophisticated reader. They'd feel comfortable since it wasn't for them. People are always happier with someone else's shit. Kitsch is like that. They feel smart peeping over somebody else's shoulder. Kids, always. So nice they have this good show. So a smart dog book for kids makes a lot more sense than a stupid dog book for adults. But you know, Jethro, which is what the dog calls me, if I may, your work already has a YA quality because of how you like it to be readable, which is a bit like chewable. And that's good, but a kid tone won't work then, see, because you're already there. I have one more thought, which is dog ghostwriting. Think of it, funny to ghostwrite for a dog. And of course, then you can all be all snarky about rock stars with ghostwriters. Not Kim, but you know, the other ones. You like being my ghostwriter, and you always that. But as you pointed out to that Irish writer, Dave, when he brilliantly proposed that he write a chick lit book, Dave, all men's books are chick lit. Every woman in literature is some guy's notion of how women think. Men invented the genre, calling it literature. Yet when women write books, they get cordoned off as chick lit. Where's dick lit, I ask. I'm female too, Jethro. I get all this. Dog ghostwriting. Great language, funny idea, but honestly, aren't all dog books dog ghostwriting? No dog writes a book. No dog wants a book written. No dog reads a book. And the only part that might be interesting is the idea that all writers are ghosts. Look at you. The writer spends her life reducing her own existence to that of a ghost. All the vitality floods onto the page, while her own existence grows wanner and thinner. Writers are pale, spooks, so to speak. Your time is winnowing to a close, and you spend a great chunk of it sequestered in rooms creating your double. To this dog, Rosie Miles, your life was a dream. Mine wasn't, so let's finish this baby and wake up. I mean, the point is to dissolve categories. Ideas hold things up. Eileen, just write. It's that simple. I will. Look at that tree moving out there, all that bobbing, all that bird song. It's paradise. Work with me. A tapestry is a great way to describe my journey inside and out because it's easy. You must first make a cartoon, then the weaver fills it in. That's you. You're the weaver, I'm the cartoonist, moi and Raphael. Nice company. I think this tapestry is what you've had in mind for a long time. It's a deep, emotive process. And fortunately, you've even got weavers in the family in Ireland, which is to say you come from a line of receptive people, thank God. In Arlington, when your father came falling off the roof, when he hung so stilly in the air as if he were held aloft by threads, well, he was. Dog tapestry. When life sends pitches you can't digest quickly enough, you convert them to a cartoon mechanism so that the colors become very hard and strong, very clear so you can abide them. Think of the work of Rainer Werner Fassbinder. Heavy shit. Same deal. Always each image leans on the other, held abreast by wefts and warps, so the shock of reality gets really caught, held. On this tapestry, your dad, who was kind of me, is still hanging in the air over your head. That tarot card feeling you had about his death was true. And here's me, my dog self, down there, low and central, bursting out of my mother's insides. A little splatter actually looks good on a tapestry. Feel the texture right at the bottom of the carpet. And there I am dying in the vet's office on University in the very sleeping bag which you carried me in. I kind of knew something was about to happen, but I kept chewing. I felt weak. Food is like a good book. That body was done. Everybody's life is this kind of picture. People get dogs to help them construct it. Feel it, Eileen, heart to heart. The energy bounces, becomes apparent. So this is the template of our relationship exposed right here, like a poem and way better than a movie or a kid's book. Because this story, the dog's journey, I cannot say often enough, is true. Okay, so we're gonna jump a little later. So now the dog is explaining how humans become dogs and dogs become humans. To be a deep and constant well of sadness is a very real thing, but it does not mean you should go either right or left. It just means you are a well. You need to go on, and especially now you need to go fast, because you want to cover some land in the time you've got left. I need to finish this tapestry, be done with your book, and resume my own traveling. Your grandmother entered into Peggy, which is another dog, because that's what people do all the time, become dogs. And dogs become human that way, and this transmigration of souls is a very Irish thing, remarked upon persistently in literature. But it's wider than Irish or American, more ancient. And we will continue now with our weaving, which I think you understand now as an intuition, a dog talking inside of your head. Listen closely and carry this message to the world. I've been other dogs. I've been people other than your father. I've been Mani. In fact, that's why you keep getting stuck at the crossroads. Your father was stuck, and so he just died, crumpled. But you kind of pause and scribble a bit, or a lot. Your favorite moment in literature was when Frank O'Hara paused. Did he pause and thought, I could just make a phone call? It was a dog thought. Robert Johnson paused. You once had a car accident listening to Robert Johnson. He's very important for you. He made a deal with the darkness at the crossroads. It's how he got so great. Like lightning hit those fingers, give it to me, he said to the devil, and that's what he got. He got it by standing there in between and welcoming the darkness in. You think it's evil, it's something else. It's what's in between. Claim it. Own it. You've heard of Manichaeism? It's the struggle between light and dark, and it's very empathetic. It's very thoughtful about the pain of the light particles trapped in all things. The light just wants to get out. I'm Mani. I painted my teaching because if you show a story, it's in the day. It's not trapped in the secret place. I mean, you can barely prove what I said, but I had influence. In fact, people generally know more about me as an anti-belief than a belief. That's okay. I take space. I take space over power any day. My pictures had power and traveled all over the world for about 500 years. I was bigger after I was dead, which I think is kind of my way. And I was trapped in a cell and I died there. What's lost has more power than what is saved, known to be lost. And that tragedy fell within and was felt within the followers. Your mother received a letter from a woman who was on your father's route, number 411 in Harvard Square, and after he died, she wrote your mother to say, what a wonderful man your father was. Do you remember the story? No need to reply. I'm taking this right to the end, all of it. I'll introduce people. I thought I'll sing a song, but I'm taking it home. I am. Here we go. You've thought about that letter so much because your mother lost it. She never gave it a second. It was the way she survived. She stood there wavering on a bit of scar tissue. It was a proud stand. That was her crossroads. She made a sound of, and then she just threw it out. That letter about him, all his letters. He's entirely gone because she needed to keep moving or she would have spent her life at the crossroads. And she built him up as an enormous, invisible man, a letter carrier, a monument, your dad, as someone you needed to see. You have such figures all over your family tree, dogs and letter carriers. Do you know why? I will tell you. To carry the sky. Here we go. There's a particular blue, a kind of vibrating denim, that was adopted by the U.S. Postal Service in the early 20th century, and it technically is described as blue mixed cadet cloth. The postal uniform is one of my favorite colors. I Mani, I Rosie, I Terrence, being illuminated exactly as much and precisely as little as a night sky in winter. In that struggle of night and dark, this is the exact fabric that depicts a frozen moment, a snowflake moment of color and crystallization that all dogs and precisely calibrated spiritual beings would recognize. Visually, there are colors that are also tones. That's the kind of painter Mani was. He used this color sparingly, just the woof of it. I'm not making a dog joke. I'm making a dog joke. It's an Iranian painter term, and I was born in Persia. I spoke Syriac, Aramaic, but let's be frank, Iran. I was an Iranian holy dog. My book of paintings was called the Arzang. Once I was no longer seated on the holy throne in churches because I was dead, the Arzang will be placed there on the highest seat. It was venerated. It was open. I'm telling you this because in our time, you must make a holy book, a book full of holes about time along the shapes that grace this tapestry. Can I be frank again? This rug, it's a magic rug, and I'm a mailman. Your father was a mailman, your grandmother's brother, Tim O'Riordan from Knocknagowan, Rye Lane Corp, mailman. On the Miles side, your grandfather's younger brother came to be known as Barney from Dunmckenna, Lighton, Monaghan, mailman. It is a shame, Eileen, you are not a mailman. The dog smiles. Perhaps you are. But the United States, as we know, is a very evil and accidentally spiritual country. It is a Manichaean country. So accidentally, pyramids speak on its money. And so accidentally, the cadet blue of Persia, a vibrating speaking color, is the uniform of the common U.S. mailman. Your father, Terrence, was one. Terrence meaning tender. It's no accident. Am I still rosy? Perhaps you should go out and look out the window and see the mixed cadet blue sky. It's a magical time and a thief's time. It's little wonder that mailmen worldwide do not simply destroy the mail. In the same way that a chorus with dogs will surely defile and piss on this rug when we are done, the mailman wants nothing better to do than destroy the mail. Why? All these men and women who are carrying these bags and carriages through the streets of the world, all of them are dogs. Does this not give you a different and a better feeling about the U.S. Postal Service? It was enough for you to learn that there had been mailmen going back on your family's history for as long as there was mail, as long as there was writing. The sky is full of pictures tonight. Cadet blue is made up of millions of pinpoints of light coming through from the other side. Other side of what, you might ask? The holes in the tapestry and the holes in the sky are of the same ilk. It is the purpose of reproduction. No, of course there is not just one night like tonight. It has a copy, and that has a copy. It is out there somewhere. The universe is doubled. I, Mani, was given prophecy by my twin. Also, if you look long at the double sky, the double universe posing as one establishes a massaging effect on your optic nerve, will open a sea of images, which is destiny and time. It is open tonight, and tonight, the night after Christmas, all the messages that were ever sent, will ever be sent, are written in the sky. Why are the postal workers angry? It's not enough to know they are dogs. Just last night, I was told on Christmas of all time a sad tale. Of course, Christmas is the saddest day of all for me because Jesus was my other. What day was Mani born? We do not know. No copy of his book, The Azang, exists. We hope this book will be that copy. We know it sat on a chair and it was revered. The dogs who work for the U.S. Postal Service are sending false messages and it breaks their hearts. The sad story I heard last night was that a dog outside of the service had been killed, had been put down for biting a mailman. This is a slow religious war. The dogs who have taken the bodies of mailmen either from birth or after the time of the age of 13, when a body of one with a weak nature may be intuited, are the natural prey of the dogs in body who are loyal to the picture, not the script. You would think then the dogs would hate writers, but it is not so. Each writer is required to tell a dog story, and so dogs attach themselves to writers to spur on the ghostwriting, and a writer might worry that too many dog books are being written, and no one will be interested in reading hers and buying it. And obviously, Mary Oliver has written a dog book. Writing a dog book is hard because the writer is in servitude to the dog most clearly now. The dog has been serving the writer for years, opening up her life and getting her out into the air and onto the beach and even bringing attractive people into the unattractive life of the writer who often never goes out. I want to return to the mailman and a letter. What is a letter, Eileen? As your father is floating over the house and the child with curly hair, with a perm, huh, is agonizingly writing the words, I will not talk in the corridors, I will not talk in the corridors. You are beginning your weaving, Eileen. Gertrude Stein is a very great weaver. All writers who use the sonic mode in writing are returning the fruits to the cave. We watched you smash a red clay pineapple one day in your farmhouse in Ireland, Eileen. I hope by now you would see the meaning of it in your windswept 18th century summer, 2013, in Italy, in Ireland. The pineapple was following you. The pineapple is Ganesh. I, Mani, brought Ganesh not into Christianity or whatever you call the thing I was glowing in. Jesus was one ball, and I, Mani, was the other. Jesus was my brother. The pineapple, of course, is a gift. Why were you so hurriedly moving the pineapple off the window one day in Ireland, getting ready to go again, I think? Once upon a time, pineapples adorned your brother's bedpost. Your brother was wealthy, Eileen. It seemed that way to you as a child because he had a paper route. You do not need a man's wealth. Mani did not need Jesus Christ's fame. People say the pineapple means welcome, but it also screams, Rish. Grown elsewhere, brought here by magic, the pineapple is a voluminous kind of mail. It will always be delivered. The mail will find you. Whose house are you in now, Eileen? No matter, I think you linked your fate to the road in that shattered moment you broke with history, and it satisfied welcome. There is only comfort now in working closely with me and all the dogs, trailing a path like a Johnny Appleseed of blue fruits and sonorities across the sky. But what is it about letters? For we want to tell the truth at last and not spread the same stale jokes about dogs and mailmen. You have mailmen in your family. They were dogs, and all mailmen are dogs, some born and some late intuited. We call them impregnated mailmen. Letters of the cave turned inside out, letters of the magic hidden. Am I against writing? Am I against the text? I am against the pineapple. Smash. I did it. And I am against the letter, too. When they say he goes postal, he is exploding from the pressure of carrying the letter for years. Often he is a soldier. Sometimes they are women, too. In fact, the post office is the single greatest employer of women in the U.S. government. Women quickly shinny up this pole of power. The pressure of a letter is great. The last great thing about letter writing was cursive, and it is gone. Cursive was a photograph of the nerves of the writer. So though the load of the letter was great, the flying hand, like a bird, told the inside of the cave of the writer. It is abstracted stuff. The pressure of the light particles is great inside matter. Imagine when there are no pictures. Each letter rolls in front of a cave and shuts out the light. What else does it do? The last great thing was the typewritten letter, the weight of the body on the tap, tap, tapping machine, the choice of paper. Often, usually, the hand has written the address on the outside of the envelope. Often, the body has moistened the stamp and has stuck it on. Less involved, we tear a piece away and we stick it on now. Possibly a hair may get caught in the pressure of that. A dirty person will leave something, if not spit. But how is the mailman against the letter itself? He carries the world, women too. The U.S. Post Office is the most gender-neutral division of the U.S. government. She carries the compacted dreams. The language implodes each time. I have sent her 36 letters of my love towards the end of a century. My wildest love, never before offered in print. I wrote it carefully on a light blue paper in India. And another year or two, in a fit of rage, I sent her all the letters back, and she burned them all, she said. Did she? My love and hers commingled in a pile of ash in her driveway. Another time, a man took all of my young poet letters I wrote him in the 80s and piled them in his sink and burned them. These people are sad demons. Lovers turned unlovers. These tragedies released the news from itself, and somewhere a postal worker's burden was lightened. The letter does not stop. You write a letter and it goes somewhere and someone reads it, and the letter goes back and forth multitudinously. A letter will never die. It must be burned, I say, to be returned to light. The post office needs to walk in the blue uniform of time, the mixed cadet, and be seen knowing your messages are being sent by his footsteps and by your thought, the ancient method. Dogs should wander freely, and so should the postal workers. FedEx is evil because it is faster. The post office could be faster still in the Neanderthal way of no trace. Not the toxic electronic light of the internet. What is the internet? The observed letter, the unprivate mind. The mind will be open soon enough. The white man came in the middle of the night and he clubbed and axed the children and the women to death. He is not worth the dogs he has working and living with him. Each wounded space should hold a potty, and it will. A letter is like a dream of a thought. We mourn the loss of a letter, but dogs mourn the loss of the thought. The postal uniforms could grow softer, longer, and looser, more like tunics. And the post office could be decorated by a tapestry such as this, made by idle postal women and men no longer on a particular route but wandering aimlessly, being the beautiful letters of our time. To be a season of postal workers wandering in their lightweight, gossamer, mixed cadet blue shirts and pants and gowns. In the winter, the fine blue wool coats reflecting the sky, and when a snowflake falls on the arm of a postal worker, he will stop and smile and gesture to all around him, and they will look at what has landed on him and what is falling in the sky, because he is a dog and dogs love snow. There is no burden anymore. Neither snow nor sleet nor rain shall be considered anything but colors and not problems at all. What the sky is doing that I am continuous with, and look at what has fallen on my arm. The hats of the worker will grow lush, wide-brimmed in summer, with flowers and fruits beginning to grow off them, and in winter, tall feathers to communicate with the birds flying south or staying around. Slowly the hats will fall and drape the bodies of the postal workers, and the clothes will begin to fall away, and the hair will grow wild and curly. The women will be models for all of the other humans, wild, strong, mammalian women of the U.S. Postal Service, carrying nothing but a strong and passionate attitude and a message for everyone, which is their own bouncing back and forth among them, all for eternity or infinity or today. Time in the hands of the postal worker will slowly become unlabeled. FedEx and UPS will continue rushing around, but increasingly they will not be carrying anything except speed itself. And eventually they'll begin bumping into each other, and only each other, because the proper refuge will have occurred, and everyone will be beginning to live slowly in the right time with themselves, because there is no kingdom now, and the end is only when the road has invited us to leave. Are we ready?